The Ghost Goal Podcast.
As we make our way up through the table for part three of the Ghost Goal Podcast Premier League season previews, we've got last season's surprise clubs to talk about this time to see if they can mount another surprise challenge up the Premier League table. We've got Fulham, we've got Brentford, we've got Brighton, we've got Villa, and last but certainly least, we've got Tottenham. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 416. Like I said, it's part three of our season previews, so we're going
from... a lot of these teams surprised, except for Tottenham, but well, they just surprised, I guess, that they finished eighth, so they were the only team that were the disappointing surprise of all of them. So yes, Alex, definitely least Tottenham, but... You know, things are looking bad for Tottenham this summer, are they, Alex?
Is that where you want to start with this one?
I think that's where the we have to start with this one, yeah, because Harry Kane, apparently they rejected a third £100 million bid from Bayern Munich that everyone thought they were going to accept. And Kane played, you know, I think yesterday and scored 4 goals in the game. I mean, this guy's on, he's been scoring and improving pretty much his entire career, and he's at his peak right now. So you can see why Tottenham don't want to let him go, and he's such a huge part of the team. I think if they keep him with the additions that they've made to the team, I think it's, you know, they're definitely looking better than they have been in a while, I think.
Yeah, there are other areas of the team where they definitely have improved or, you know, made certain loan signings permanent to keep them on that upward trajectory. But so much of it hinges on what's going on with Kane, which I think Kane, it's between him and Mbappe for the two players this season that the rest of the Western Europe basically is waiting for them to basically find their new homes, you know, and there will be a domino effect that takes place once those moves, if they do happen in Mbappe and Kane's circumstances, if they do end up happening. You're going to see, you know, probably a player like Vlahovic move from Juventus. Maybe that's a possible Kane replacement because Tottenham are going to need someone. And you'll see, you know, dominoes fall after that as Tottenham go out to find their Harry Kane replacement. Do we need to do a two-part sort of preview, like give predictions for Tottenham if Kane stays for the last year of his contract and if he leaves? Because I feel like that's kind of necessary at this point.
Sure, yeah, I think that's fair. I think he's going to stay. I think that Harry Kane's been there his entire career. At this point, there's been so many chances that he could have left, and he usually just re-signs another deal. And then the next year, everyone thinks he's going to leave, and then he doesn't. And then it's been the cycle for him. And I actually think that he wants to break the Premier League goal-scoring record, like, all time, which he can do it if he stays in the Premier League. So I think as much as like the money might be tempting him, the trophies, I don't know. I somehow think that he's just going to buy into Tottenham's bullshit again and just think that he can actually win something there again. And, you know, they've made some pretty good signings. I like James Maddison. I think he adds a lot to the team. He kind of fills a void that Eriksen didn't, you know, that was left by Eriksen and has never really been filled. You know, Pedro Porro, I haven't really seen him play too much.
Well, he played in the second half of the season, and he wasn't great for Tottenham last season, but you could go ahead and say that most of Tottenham's squad was not great in the second half of last season.
Yeah, I didn't really watch Tottenham at all in the second half of last season because they were, you know, it was like they'd given up. I think Manor Solomon, that can be, you know, decent signing. I guess... Maybe it doesn't look that good for them.
That's
Alex.
The thing. So much of it hinges on, one, Kane staying, and two,
I think
even
they'll make a bunch
stay,
of signings if he leaves, obviously.
Yeah, but even if he does stay, there's the matter of Ange Postecoglou, their new manager, who we talked about when it was like first announced that he'd be taking over. It's kind of a swing for the fences kind of move. He's always been like a pretty attacking manager, and it's going to be up to him to shift the focus away from this like defensive, Italian Antonio Conte style.
Well, Alex, let me tell you. So Tottenham have played 3 preseason games. I know it's preseason, but to take this obviously with a huge grain of salt, But this is, I saw some statistics in those games that I never saw for Tottenham games last season, which was in all three of the games, they had over 30 shots, you know, something like, you know, 7 to 15 of those were on target, but they were just shooting a lot more. So like you said, maybe a much more attacking approach. And they were scoring boatloads of goals. I mean, they've looked good. They've won all their games. I know that it's preseason, and one of them was against like a, you know, I think like a third division or fourth division team. I don't know who they played, but they still look impressive in the games that they've played. They're taking a lot of shots. They look like a more offensive team. I think they won't be that good defensively, but it kind of looks like their wingbacks get forward a lot. They're given a lot of freedom, and their strikers take a bunch of shots from, you know, kind of difficult areas, and they have players like Son and Kane who can just place one from you know, the top of the box, and that's kind of seems to be like what he wants to his players to do. He wants players who can just get into decent positions, take a shot, and you know that we're going to see a Tottenham team that just attacks a lot and probably concedes a lot of goals. I mean defensively they've always had that more of a focus with, you know, managers like Conte and Mourinho, and it's just been years, Pochettino, of more defensive-minded approaches, and Pochettino not so much, but...
Pochettino's a defensive manager in the same way that Klopp is a defensive manager. They use, you know, high to medium pressing to try and, you know, win the ball back high up the field and attack that way. But they're not like Mourinho or Conte, who like to sit back and defend deep. I think there is like a bit of a... There's going to be a bit of a process. There goes that word that's so popular around the league now. There's a process for, you know, pretty much every team, and to sort of take a large, you know, freighter ship that takes a long time to about face and turn. It's not just going to like turn on a dime like a smaller ship would. It's going to take weeks, if not months, of, you know, drilling this much more openly sort of focused style into these Tottenham players, to the point where they can do it without conceding three or four goals. So there's going to be some ugly results. It's kind of similar to Chelsea, the thing that's going on at Chelsea at the moment. But Tottenham, actually, you'd think they have the attacking players, you know, at least on paper, especially
I think they're going to score a lot of goals this season.
They can score a lot of goals and look good doing it.
They're going to be similar to Liverpool, I think, in that they're going to win some games 6-1. You know, they're going to blow some teams out when they get momentum, when they're playing well, they're going to dominate teams. But then there's going to be times where they go behind and they might score a goal or two, but, you know, just also get blown out themselves. So there'll be times where they get heavily criticized. And I think that's just going to be the way Tottenham is, at least for this season. But it'll definitely be more exciting for the fans. And I'm sure it'll be, you know, a breath of fresh air to all the football they've been seeing for years and years now at Tottenham.
They finished eighth last season. If you had to guess higher or lower, where would you guess them finishing?
I think they're going to finish higher if they keep Kane.
So is it just as simple as if they keep Kane, they're finishing higher than eighth? If they don't keep Kane, they're finishing eighth or lower?
I mean, I think if they don't keep Kane, we'd have to see who they bring in, but most likely I think they could finish around eighth again.
I'd feel pretty confident saying they will not finish higher than eighth if they lose Harry Kane, because regardless of who they bring in, they're not going to be as good of an option as Kane. Kane had an excellent season last year, and people only, you know, don't remember it as such because Haaland came in and broke the record his very first season. But Kane still was like very good last season and made up for a lot of deficiencies from someone like Son, who had one of his worst seasons ever. So they lose Kane, that's, you know, half their goals are lost from the team, and now they're all of a sudden relying on James Maddison, Son, Kulusevski, and whoever Kane's replacement is to make up for that honestly pretty crappy defense. So I'm gonna, you know, just put my Chelsea fan hat on here and say I think Kane will end up leaving. I don't think it's for the money, like was mentioned earlier. I think it's literally so that he can, you know, form his own sort of winning legacy, basically. And if with Man United signing this Hoyland guy that we'll get to on the next pod, they're not in the open market for a striker anymore. The spots are, you know, pretty much gone in England for him to go and be the center forward who, you know, breaks the goal scoring record in England while winning something. So I think his best move is to go to Bayern Munich, and yeah, they'll win the league with or without him, but he actually has a chance to win the Champions League if he goes to Bayern Munich, you know? So hopefully that move comes through. Who do we want to talk about next? Do you want to talk about, let's maybe work our way down the table a little bit, the 10th place team from last season? Fulham. I know we wanted to give them a mention and talk about not so many good things about Fulham, reasons that Fulham fans should be kind of worried about this season is that the transfer incomings haven't been plentiful. The outgoings have not hit them too hard just yet, but there are strong rumors that Alexander Mitrovic, their talismanic center forward who scored most of their goals and led the line excellently for them last season, he straight up said that he's never going to play for Fulham again, even though his move to Al Hilal fell off or fell through for now. Many people expect either that or another move from Saudi Arabia, a different club, to come looking for him soon. So as of right now, he's still a Fulham player, but he's said that he'll never play for the club after they turned down that move from Al Hilal that, you know, would have made him a very, very, very rich man. He would have been getting paid like Haaland money at Manchester City, except over in Saudi Arabia. So can't say I blame him too much for that. But assuming like a similar question for Fulham that we had for Tottenham and Kane, if Fulham don't have Mitrovic for this season, what do you see their season outlook looking like?
I think as long as they have Marco Silva, they'll be okay in the Premier League. I think he's definitely a Premier League level manager. And I think he's established a mentality and a way of playing at Fulham that even when they didn't have Mitrovic last season, they played well in the Premier League. I mean, they would have stayed up without Mitrovic with that team last year. And I actually really do like Calvin Bassey. I think he's going to go straight into the team and improve them defensively. I think that'll let them hopefully get rid of Diop. And then they can play Bassey and Adebayo at the back. And that's going to be a formidable physical center back duo, which they can build off. They've got quick wing backs with Robinson and...
Well, they've got two good right backs, Tete and Mbabu.
Yeah, from, Tete and Robinson. And Mbabu, yeah. And then Robinson on the other side. I mean, they've got the wing backs. They just needed another good center back, and I think they got it. So I think, as long as they keep Paulinho, who he's another one who, I think he dislocated his shoulder in preseason. They're going to need him back soon. But I was at that Premier League series talking to some Fulham fans, and they seem hopeful that they think the biggest piece is Marco Silva. They think he's, like a genius of his own in his own way, like making their club play as well as they did last season. So they have faith that he can keep them up for sure. Still keep them like mid table out of relegation trouble, even if Mitrovic leaves, because if he leaves, it's going to be for big money and they're going to buy someone to replace him. So Fulham have never been the type of club to not, I mean, I think the signings they've made, Raul Jimenez is like a, just a backup option. And he looks pretty, he's looked pretty decent. Even if Mitrovic doesn't play, they have Vinicius,
really,
and Jimenez. I mean, I know that's not like
he's
that
not
many goals.
The same since David Luiz did his skull in like 2020. He used to be a very good and effective center forward, not just for scoring goals, but for, holding up play and occupying the defenders for others to attack at Wolves. But ever since he came back from that cracked skull, it's like he's been chasing to get back to being like almost as good as he was before. He would need a similar sort of renaissance that like Willian had there last year. When they brought in Willian as like a free agent, he'd been, bought out by Arsenal and then Flamengo in Brazil.
Same with Andres Pereira. Like both of them have had renaissances under Marco Silva. So players it's happened. And Marco Silva's made players work that
again,
I didn't
not,
think
I'm
could
not
work.
Saying it won't happen. I'm saying that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some more Marco Silva magic, for that to end up paying off, basically, because right now they're going into the season with their two best attacking or, strikers are Raul Jimenez and Vinicius. The is he Brazilian or Portuguese? I think he's Brazilian, the center
Brazilian,
forward they got from Benfica last year. That's okay, but I don't see that like propelling them to the same sort of start that they had last season with Mitrovic like firing fully at the beginning of the season. if they stay up this season and Mikhailovic leaves, I think that would be very good if they stayed up. That would be a pretty good season for them to stay up. And I'm guessing they're going to be one of the teams that drops down into the bottom half of the table for next season.
I think they're going to drop down as well, but especially if Mitrovic leaves. But I think it'll be a tough season, but I think Marco Silva is good enough to keep them up. But I think that they could be in relegation trouble if Mitrovic leaves, for sure.
Okay, who do we want to talk about next?
Brentford, Alex. What do you think of Brentford? They finished ninth. I like Thomas Frank. I think he's an underrated manager. I think they had some great wins. I think they beat Manchester City last season. They had two great games against us. You know, we narrowly beat them one time, and then they drew us with, they probably should have beaten us the second time. You know, just against the big teams, Brentford last season were fantastic. I think a huge part of that, though, was Ivan Toney. And not having Ivan Toney is going to be massive this season. I mean, it's going to be the difference between like 20 goals in this team. You know, I don't think Brian Mbeumo and Yona Wisa are good enough. It's similar to like Vinicius and Raul Jimenez. Like you might get a few goals out of them, but like it's not going to be anything close to the output that a Mitrovic or a Toney had. So I think for me, this is a team that could be in relegation trouble. You know, because of the Toney thing, because I don't think that they're going to be bringing in any replacements. Although I do like their, you know, I do like Nathan Collins. I think that's a good signing. I'm not really sure about Flecken, the goalkeeper that they've brought in. It looks like he's going to be the starting goalkeeper. I think it's another big loss that they're going to lose David Raya, who was probably their best player outside of Toney last season. So two huge players that are not going to be playing for Brentford for this season. And yeah, I think worrying days for Brentford. I think Thomas Frank, like Marco Silva, he's a good enough manager to keep them in the Premier League, but I foresee them dropping further in the table, not being pushing on at all from their you know, performances last season, and struggling to and you know, going to be fighting relegation, I think, till near the end.
See, I don't go as far as relegation for them. I think that's more of a threat to Fulham if Mitrovic is gone, like we just mentioned. Toney, you at least have like a set end date for when he's going to be back. He's, you know, been suspended for all of these gambling violations that we were talking about as far back as January. The FA made it, he cleared everyone that they were going to be charging him for those. The punishment came down. It's 6 or 8, 7 months ban from all footballing activities. So he can't even train with the team while he's suspended, and he wouldn't be allowed back in, I think, until December is when he'd be back into the squad for training and things like that and evaluations. But then he'll be back in January, you know, a couple days into January. So they will have Ivan Toney back at some point this season if they, you know, don't end up selling him or something like that.
Oh, well, if they keep him, if they're getting him back that early, then I thought it January. Was the whole season that he was out.
And honestly, I trust the infrastructure at Brentford much more so than I do Fulham. Fulham, to me, seem a bit more dependent on someone like Mitrovic to score the goals. Brentford, to me, they had a system that even when Toney had been injured in the past, they're very solid defensively. They're good on the ball and keeping possession when they need to. And they're excellent and have huge threats on set pieces. So they can, I think they, for a half season, they can sort of tread water around mid-table, maybe lower half of the table. And people will bring up relegation, you know, just because everyone, you know, it's a reasonable threat for any team in the bottom half of the table at the first half of the season. You want to stay away from it. But I think once Ivan Toney comes back, maybe they make a signing or two in January. They'll push right back up to that the further up the table. I think they'll still finish lower than ninth, which was their finish last season. So I guess you could say they're going to regress a bit this season. But I think given the circumstances, if you're a Brentford fan, you'd take that all day. You would be 100% like behind that.
Yeah, 11th or 12th around there. Not too far of a regression.
I do just want to mention this Kevin Shade winger that they signed. They signed him on loan in January of last season. He's a 21-year-old German winger from Freiburg, same club that they've signed Mark Flecken, the goalkeeper from. he didn't play much at all, maybe a couple of FA Cup games last year for Brentford, but didn't really feature in the league much. But him and what's the name of the Danish midfielder that they have? The one who was great at the Euros. Why am I forgetting his name?
Damsgaard.
Mikkel Damsgaard. Those two players to me are very pivotal for Thomas Frank as he tries to, you know, shift the team's identity from that three or five at the back that they came up into the league playing into this 4-3-3 that we saw more and more from them last season. To play that style, they're going to need two, and I guess you can factor Brian Mbeumo into this as well. You're going to need more, you know, specifically winger kind of players. You're going to need players who are capable of making darting runs from wide areas into the middle to make up for what they're losing in Tony. And they're all going to have to score more goals. And
they're also seems losing Raya. You don't think that that's going to have a big effect?
Yeah, but I'm talking about mainly the attacking focus. You know, because you're losing Tony.
But Raya was like a great attacking outlook. Like he was always passing balls out the back and like letting Brentford keep possession against the big teams. I mean, he was such a huge part of their like identity last season and of big wins that they got. I just think they're losing a huge part of their team there.
See, I'm not going to disagree with you because it is a big part of the team to lose. But Brentford, they scored more goals off of winning the ball in the opponent's defensive third, Brentford's attacking third. They scored more goals than any other team in the league last season, high up, winning the ball back, creating chances that
way. So much of that was Tony, though. So much of it
was that's why I'm saying it's important. It's important.
Space.
It's important for the players that are coming in to replace him and this, you know, new way of playing for it to work. They're going to need players like Damsgaard and Mbeumo and Shade, this young winger. These young legs, specifically the younger players, they're going to have to be the sort of like workhorses that make it happen. I'm not necessarily predicting that to be the case, but everyone needs to watch to see how this kid Shade, you know, settles down. Damsgaard as well. I probably have higher hopes for Damsgaard than I do Shade, but
I think it'll be interesting because I do believe in Thomas Frank. I think he's a great manager. I think he'll manage a bigger team than Brentford one day. I think he'll be, you know, given the reins of somewhere like Dortmund or
supposedly he turned down Tottenham this summer.
Yeah, I'm sure he has more bigger aspirations. But you know, I could see him being at a big club and maybe even Liverpool one day. I mean, again, I think he's that good, especially because if somehow Brentford are able to, you know, finish around this again, 10th, 9th, like in the top half of the table again, it'd be super impressive with the players that he has, and it would show like Thomas Frank's pedigree in the league. I think they're going to suffer a lot because of the players they're losing, but you know, I hope I'm wrong cuz I do like Thomas Frank. I you know, I think his press conferences are super interesting. I like his demeanor. You know, I think his teams play mostly fair and good football. So all props to him. And I think they're a great addition to the Premier League.
If you had to pick one of these teams to be most threatened by relegation, Brentford or Fulham, who would you say should be most worried? That's not to say you're picking them to
Fulham.
Get relegated.
Yeah,
okay.
Fulham.
So we're on the same page in that one. Again, don't think either Brentford or Fulham will get relegated, but I think there's going to be a point in this season, and I would choose Fulham to be that team where, you know, they're looking just behind them and seeing that relegation race, and, you know, the heights of last season are could never seem further away. Those first three teams, we seem kind of, you know, maybe not down on, but maybe we just don't think they're on the same sort of upward trajectory that they seemed to be last season. We're now coming to the two teams that I think, you know, impressed everyone the most last season from this sort of mid to upper mid-table crop. First of those that we're going to talk about now is Aston Villa, who started last season under Steven Gerrard. We're looking terrible. We're looking like one of the teams that could get sucked into that relegation zone until they brought in Unai Emery in November, I believe, of last year. And they shot up the table to eventually finish seventh place. With 61 points. They're going back to Europe for the first time in like 13 or 14 years.
Good evening.
They'll be competing in the Europa Conference League, which West Ham won last season. And they haven't been making a ton of signings, but they have made three very impactful signings in Pau Torres from Villarreal, Yuri Tielemans from Leicester City, and then most recently Moussa Diaby, the French winger who joins from Bayer Leverkusen in a 55 million euro deal. They've done all that while not really selling any of the key parts to their squad. They're letting like Ashley Young, who's 38, he's going to Everton, sold Marvelous Nakamba, who was on loan at Luton last year, didn't need him. And a couple other players that barely featured for them in these last few years. Predictions are going as far for Unai Emery's team as, you know, picking them as top four contenders. Are you willing to go that far, Javier? Or do you think there needs to be a little, maybe a slight step back to allow Unai Emery maybe a little bit of...
No, Alex, you have to finish your take on them first before I give you mine. I'm not revealing mine first. You go ahead. What were you going to say about them? What do you think is going to happen with them?
So I wasn't gearing up to give a take. I was gearing up to ask you about yours, but I was just saying how like you're noticing a lot of other noticing a lot of outlets, you know, start picking Aston Villa for this top four race. And off of last season's form, I don't think that's unfair, but I do want to bring to attention to a lot of people that the last couple of times that Aston Villa have gone out there, fired their underperforming manager, and then brought in a new manager, that new manager has, whether it's Steven Gerrard, Dean Smith, whoever, they've usually had a long spurt or the rest of the season when they first come in where they have the team looking good. It's at the start of the following season where the mindset and the team focus overall just seems to drop off at the start of the next season. So I'm going to have my eyes on Aston Villa, like to see whether they're believing the hype about themselves going into this season, like it was last year. Do you remember last year when Steven Gerrard seemed to be doing okay there, and they went out in the very first game, they lost 2-0 to Bournemouth, who were just recently promoted. You know, it's results like that when they think they're on the upward trajectory, they start believing their own hype a little bit too much. And then they just lose their focus and get upset by a couple of teams that they should be beating. So I think that's something to watch out for this season. But the finishing in the European places is, again, whether it's Europa Conference League or the Europa League place in sixth place, I feel like that's a attainable goal for Aston Villa. Because remember, they are competing in both Premier League and, the Europa Conference League. Two fronts, first time they've had to deal with that for a while. How does that affect the team? So I think it's fair to say seventh or sixth place.
I think for Villa, they're one of the teams that improve on their position. I do think they're going to finish higher than seventh. I'm very, very high on their three signings that they've made so far. I think getting Yuri Tielemans on a free, I think it's a huge signing for them. I think that getting that type of player in midfield is exactly who they needed. They won't have to rely on like a youngster like Jacob Ramsey like they did all of last season. He can just, get into the team and share time with Tielemans and learn from him. And they have their ferocious tackling midfielder, Boubacar Kamara, who, he's a gem. They pulled him out and paid big money for him, and he's absolutely going to be on a bigger team in a couple of years here. I think he's, around the level of someone like Caicedo. That he's really is that good. Douglas Luiz, excellent. Another player who's been linked with moves away. They have Ollie Watkins. They don't even, they're stacked on the bench. Like they didn't have Diego Carlos, who is a center back that they signed from Sevilla for like 25 million at the beginning of last summer, and then he tore his ACL, was out all of last year. He's now back into the team, and he's a monster. He's like 6'5", like 220 pounds. Quick, like this guy is huge. He's going to be playing again. They're not going to have to rely on Konza and Mings anymore. Bringing in Pau Torres, he's not a Rolls Royce of a center back, but he's like an Audi. The guy's got he's quick on the ball. He's got great decision making. He can pass. He's played for the Spanish national team. I think it's another
City,
great signing. Like. Think of like the level of someone maybe like Aymeric Laporte, who I know City are trying to maybe get rid of right now, but he's about that good. He's a very, very good player. And then, they've got a bunch of youngsters in the team, players from their academy, the Cameron Archer, I already mentioned Jacob Ramsey, Caden Young, who I know that they're like excited about, that Jaden Philogene kid, who plays on the wing for them. He's probably going to get some game time this season. You know, they have a lot of young, exciting talent, and I think those players are going to play in the Conference League until later on, you know, and I'm sure with a mix of first team players, but they like players like Buendia on the bench, and they don't have to rely on McGinn now anymore in midfield. You know, he can play less. Again, it just, I think the depth is there now for them, and Villa are a historic club in the Premier League, and they've had, you know, pushes for, they've never finished in the top four, I don't think, but
I think back in the 90s they did a couple times, but
did they? Okay.
You know, before I was watching games frequently.
No, but, I think it's going to be a great season for Aston Villa, and I think they're going to finish six. I think they're going to go one better and finish in the Europa League spot, and I think that they're going to be a surprise and beat a lot of teams that maybe think they could fancy against them, but you know, I think they'll get results against the top six or whatever, you know, the so-called top six.
Okay, so from what I remember from the last pod, you said that you think Chelsea might end up finishing fifth, so Villa in sixth. So is like Liverpool, Newcastle, Arsenal, Man United, are they dropping it? We'll save that for the next pod. I just want you to be aware of your predictions so you don't end up picking two teams to finish fifth and two teams to finish sixth, you know?
Well, no, I said you guys could finish up to around, you know, fifth. Fourth okay. or fifth, but you could finish sixth or seventh. Chelsea aren't necessarily going to finish.
Look,
I need to see how it all goes.
Let me bring it back to Villa. Villa are one of the teams that are above Chelsea in the table right now that I do not see Chelsea surpassing this season. You're right. Their depth is vastly improved, but where I think Villa fans and neutrals would need to keep an eye on is the fact that while they have depth, that depth is in two very specific positions. It's at center back. You already mentioned all the players they've brought in and already have in Mings, Konsa, Diego Carlos, and Pau Torres. And then in midfield, center midfield specifically. Now, that favors how Emery has been playing so far with Villa, because he does like to use these sort of inverted center midfielders playing out in those wider areas.
They've got a bunch of wingers, too. Moussa, I didn't even talk about Moussa Diaby. Like, Moussa Diaby is an incredible signing.
He is an incredible signing.
They have him, Leon Bailey, you know.
Buendia is a little bit of an in-between.
They don't play Coutinho, but yeah, Buendia. And then they have Watkins and...
Well, that's where I wanted to, you know, talk a little bit about their dependence on Watkins. They're going to be relying on him to score definitely 15 goals in the league this season. And when if he's not firing or if he's injured or something like that, then it's a lot of responsibility to put on Cameron Archer, who, you know, is coming back from two straight loans in the Championship where he's done very well for Middlesbrough. But it's a big step up. I think he can do it if they run him out in a lot of those Europa Conference League group games, give him some, you know, experience with this set of players, this team, at a somewhat high level. I wouldn't say Conference League is the same level as the Premier League, but maybe that can boost his confidence and he starts to make an impact more so in the Premier League. So the other player we haven't mentioned yet because he's been injured for all of preseason is John Duran. I think he's Colombian. Center forward. I don't remember too many goals that he scored in the second half of last season, but he's like a very electric, quick, exciting center forward. And if he gets back healthy soon enough, those are decent enough options as backup to Watkins in Archer and Duran that, you know, maybe one of them, you know, find some confidence, find some form, and can maybe even play alongside Watkins. So it's gonna be up to Unai Emery to develop those players. I think I'm gonna stick with them in seventh, maybe sixth, but I'm not willing to go there yet. I think a better option for them may be to, you know, focus on the Europa Conference League like West Ham did, win it, and get themselves into Europa League that way. That seems like it would be easier to do than
I just realized Chelsea are finishing higher. Seventh, Alex, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, see, I just want you to keep in mind. I want you to you know, keep in mind
you're
who you're picking to finish where.
You're gonna be in Conference League, Alex.
Hey, it's Europe. We'll seventh. Take it. It's another trophy, another European trophy to win. We can complete the set, Javier.
Yeah, you're the first team to win all three. It'll be fun.
All right. Well, we can't end this pod without talking about Brighton. I'll let you take the reins on Brighton because I have a checkered relationship with that club. But you go right ahead, Javier.
Well, Alex, I think Brighton's going to be another team that doesn't finish as high as they did last season. I think that while they did have De Serbe, and they've made some great signings, I think. I really like that they've brought back that lone winger, Simon Adringa, 21-year-old who played on Union SG last year. I think it's in the Bundesliga, second tier of the Bundesliga, right?
No, it's in Belgium.
No, it's in Belgium. Well, he got 15 goals, 15 assists for them last season. You know, that's pretty good. You know, and he's looked good in preseason for them. They brought in João Pedro for pretty big money, 34 million euros. We've talked about him already and his impact. That goalkeeper kid that they brought in. They brought in
Bart Verbruggen.
Yeah, Bart Verbruggen. There you go, Alex. And then we've got Igor, who I've never really seen play on Fiorentina, but Fiorentina were pretty good last season, so they paid 17 million for him. We'll see how much game time he gets this season. And then Mahmoud Daoud, you know, we've seen him play in the Bundesliga for a long time. They brought him in on a free. That's kind of a sneaky little free signing. Same with James Milner, just more depth. And then they're rumored to be going after Mo Kudus, a player who's, you know, been linked with Arsenal and Chelsea and a bunch of other clubs this summer, but ultimately no moves for him. And we'll see if that comes off for them. So, but they did lose some decently big pieces, Alex. They lost Alexis McAllister to Liverpool earlier in the summer, and they just lost Robert Sanchez, who I know they've been playing Jason Steele, and they brought in this other guy, but they sold him to Chelsea, and he was a big part of their run under Potter. We'll see if Caicedo ends up leaving or not. It looks like he missed training or whatever today, so I think if he ends up leaving, that'll be a huge loss for them, and they'll definitely be, you know, not as good as they were last season. I don't think they'll be able to replace him. Not with this much time and with the players left in the window who would be able to move to be. But Brighton are, you know, wizards at that, so maybe they've got someone in, you know, waiting in the wings. Who knows? But I think the reason why I have them finishing lower, Alex, is because I think competing in Europa League, which is a pretty decently hard competition, and you go to some, you know, messed up places there. You go to Azerbaijan or you go to Turkey, you go to, you know, and it's going to be long away trips to these places. And while Brighton have some squad depth, I'm not so sure if like the way that the style that they play, the high energy style they play, if they're going to be able to maintain that the entire season, you know, through Europa League as well. Because I think they'll do well at the beginning in Europa and they'll play, you know, as hard as they can in Europa. But I think that their league form will suffer because of it. But I think they could go do well in Europa, like go to like a semifinal or a final. Like I think that's how good this team can be. But I don't think that they can keep it up on two fronts. Also with FA Cup and Carabao Cup, like they're going to have four different competitions to play in. And I think it's going to be too much for them. Their first season doing something like this ever. You know, they're not a historic team like Aston Villa. They haven't done it before. You know, Aston Villa made runs in Europe before, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, they're, like I said, they're a historic club. Brighton have been a small club. This is the biggest and best Brighton I've ever been. And I think it's going to be a lot. And I think they finish maybe eighth or ninth, you know, but they still have a good season in the league, maybe even 10th. But I think they do more in the cups than, and that's where they shine this season.
Yeah, and they've been knocking on the door of that for a couple of years now. Even under Potter, they got to a FA Cup semifinal a couple of years ago under him, and they got back to an FA Cup semifinal last year. I think they lost to Manchester United when, you know, for large parts of that game, they outplayed.
They dominated a lot of that game. So,
the next step of that is to, you know, get some silverware. It would be huge for that fan base. I'm sure they would like to maintain their league position or even improve it. But I think you're right in that they would definitely bite your hand off for any kind of trophy win, whether that's, you know, the domestic trophies or in Europe. You know, while maybe their league position suffers a little bit. The focus for this team, I think, isn't going to be the players they bring in this current window, though they have brought in a couple of, you know, eye-opening ones that could do well. I think it's going to be the further progression and development of players who, you know, came on strong last year, like Evan Ferguson up top, Julio Enciso, Facundo Buonanotte, these young players who, you know, maybe didn't burst on the scene as much as Kairo Matoma did, but you know they're younger and with a full season rather than, you know, slowly being filtered into the squad gradually like they were last year. They're full first team players now. They have De Zerbi's trust and recognition. He's going to play someone like Nciso and Ferguson, definitely. I wouldn't be surprised to see either of them starting from the beginning of the season. And with that sort of trust that they have from the manager, can they take those next steps to, you know, progress even more? And they were, you know, Nciso especially last season was excellent, scored, you know, two of the goals of the season and did it at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea and against Manchester City at home. So him and... I'll put Evan Ferguson up there too, you know, just because I want it and I need it for Ireland. Those two players are going to have to really improve this season for Brighton to meet their goals. As far as prediction for them, I think I'm going to agree with you, but I'm going to go a little bit lower. I think I'm going to go ninth place for Brighton. But not like a bad ninth. They'll still have sections of the season where they do well.
I said ninth or tenth. I said not
eighth. Oh, I thought you went eighth. Yeah, okay. So we're on the same page there. Yeah. All right. Well, that should do us for this episode. The 6th place through 10th place teams from last year. We've talked about them all now. We'll be looking ahead a little bit later this week. We're doubling up this week with the Premier League starting on Friday. We've got the teams that finished 1st through 5th coming up on the last part of our 4-part season previews. Javier, thanks for joining me on this one. Much appreciated. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, follow him at JavierRev9. You can follow me at ASBoss92 on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Also, we've only got a few days left until the Premier League season starts on Friday. Before then, make sure you join our Fantasy Premier League mini league, the Ghost Goal Podcast Fan League. If you go to fantasy.premierleague.com, you can create your team there and then search the mini league. Again, that's Ghost Goal Podcast Fan League. And if you need the code to get into the league, go ahead, go to our Twitter account, at Ghost Goal Pod. We've got it as the pinned tweet there, so you can access that code and get into
the
league.
When are you going to start using X? When are you going to start saying it X or never? Are you just never going to call it X? You're going to always call it Twitter.
I will never call it X, Javier. Never. I will call it Twitter till the day I die. Twitter, X.
Twitter! Yes, I agree, Alex. We'll it's always Twitter call it Twitter. Fuck Elon. You're not changing our shit. You're not changing our shit, Elon.
I joined in 2009. I'm grandfathered into this shit. But yes, keep an eye out for our final preview pod of the preseason later this week. And until next time. See ya.